There's a big divide between old and young, and he's argued that Labour is one of the few examples in England where you've got unification of the older generation and younger generations unified in one political view. And I'm just not sure if that's true. To me, sometimes I feel like he's living in La La Land.
Yeah.
And perhaps overly optimistic. And I think sometimes you do need to be a little bit more realistic. And it's all very well sounding positive. And I know he wants Labour to come across as strong as possible. But I think sometimes it's actually very, very valuable if you admit your weaknesses and come up with solutions rather than trying to twist them to sound better. Not even weaknesses, but acknowledge things that have been criticised.
Yeah.
And make a promise to improve them. And I do think, I personally wouldn't say that Labour is a unified party. I think they've still got a lot of problems. They're still divided within their own hierarchy, let alone within Labour supporters.
Yeah, I thought that was a little bit of him saying with, like, Theresa May's cabinet is a coalition of chaos. I thought it was a little bit Paul Kett and Black.
Like. Yeah.
I think as well, the similarities between between the two leaders of ignoring perhaps the reality around them and just kind of bullishly regarding their chances is pretty good, in the sense that I think when Corbyn was being challenged for leadership and stuff, he was quite embattled and was often kind of, he looked a little bit kind of forlorn almost some of the time when he was doing his speeches, because he knew he was barely dragging his own party behind him and was also trying to be the opposition party as well. And then I think the change of demeanour from that interview he did with Andrew Marr after the election, where he says, you know, I've got youth on my side, and suddenly this, you know, this Jeremy Corbyn who turns up for rallies and is being cheered, I don't think it's gone to his head. But
put a spring in his step.
But yeah,
for sure.
I think he's basically just thought, you know what, I've got a platform, I've got support, I'm going to charge on regardless of all the naysayers. And the problem is that that's kind of good in terms of keeping the momentum behind him and the youth support that he has. But the other people within his party, it's not going to help kind of win them over. One of the things he did talk about as well was rent controls. And I think, already, you know, if you want to, I think he missed an opportunity with, you know, a lot of big business being extremely nervous about Theresa May's Brexit and transitional deal. And I think he had the opportunity to maybe try and win them over.
And that most certainly.
Yeah, and something like rent controls.
And launching a war against gentrification.
As well, yeah.
And he's increasing tax as well for businesses and hire owners, which.
I think, Harry, you've definitely picked on something there. And I remember reading an article, I think it was today, saying that the business world has been very disappointed by his speech, because I think they thought he would seize upon that moment of Tory weakness and try to, I think, if not calm their nerves, at least suggest that
an alternative,
but instead of maybe being quite so belligerent.
Yeah, it's the Adam Smith Institute who have come out swinging.
Yeah.
And they said, while we never going to come out batting for Jeremy Corbyn, his speech this afternoon ending Labour's annual conference in Brighton marked a new low with his promise for rent controls. It may come as no surprise that the Adam Smith Institute disagrees with hardline socialist Jeremy Corbyn, but rent control is a rare case where economists almost all agree, left and right, that 95% of top economists agreed rent controls in San Francisco and New York had worsened the amount and quality of affordable rental quality there. And you can see why prospective tenants in rent-controlled Stockholm languish on waiting lists for 15 years on average. Expensive is one thing, but impossible is quite another. The Conservatives responded saying, Jeremy Corbyn's speech summed up the problem with Labour. Lots of big promises, but no explanation of how they would deliver them. And Vince Cable said that, once again, Jeremy Corbyn confirmed he is one of Brexit's biggest cheerleaders. The two issues that he needed, business and Brexit, he didn't wow the opposition, or he just kind of, you know, motivated his own base, really.
And he's also still being demonised for the socialism side of things. Like, yeah, I do agree with what he was saying, but again, it is still that demonisation for having socialist issues. And there is one kind of redeeming quality in that, at least, you know, he's not sacrificing any of his. It's quite refreshing to see one that's not going to sacrifice any of their principles.
Yeah.
However, was it a smart move? Is this really the time for principles?
I mean, that's what Jeremy Corbyn's been throughout his entire career, though. He's been a man that has stuck to his principles come hell or high water. He will not back down.
But is that always practical for a politician if they can't adapt? Is there not a time where you need to adapt with the times? Or at least relax a little bit on your certain views?
the thing is, I think a lot of politicians would probably say, yes, you do need to be flexible, you do need to compromise. I mean, you know, with a lot of, you know, for example, with Brexit and stuff, that's gonna, there are going to have to be compromises made with that. And I, for example, don't think that Jeremy Corbyn would, because whilst, like Harry said, you know, a lot of people did actually appeal to the fact that it
is appealing, sort of, it's definitely appealing.
Yeah, he wasn't, you know, taking like a populist route and sort of saying, you know, promising different views to various people when it might go completely against what he stands for. But on the same, you know, flip side of that, is that really what the country sort of needs at the moment? Yeah. Can that, he deliver? Also, on Brexit, I mean, you do always get the sense with Jeremy Corbyn when he's talking about Brexit that potentially he actually thinks that he doesn't agree with the EU and what the EU is, but
he's permanently made that clear.
Yeah, but he can't actually sort of, because Labour, you know, Labour's position, that's the one of those policies where you do see he has his tongue tied on it, and it's, you know, whenever he's asked that, you see the awkwardness and how he responds. That's one of the few ones where we say, well, okay, well, why don't you compromise? That's when you look and say, well, is he good at compromising? Because he just shuts down and becomes a bit tries to pass it on to something else.
I think, yeah, you've made a really good point there. And though he's speaking about unity, his lack of clarity on where he stands on Brexit and what he would intend does lead you to question, does he know exactly what he wants, but is he too scared to express it? I mean, he's one man representing our entire party, so he can't just go with his views. And to touch on what Nicky was saying about big promises, I do think big promises and principles can only take you so far, and he's going to have to start showing how he's going to deliver.
Yeah, he mentioned in his speech about how Labour would want unimpeded access to the free market, but never really, like, at what cost?
And how,
like,
are they going to negotiate?
Obviously, like, the Tories have wanted access to the free market, but are getting shut down by the EU. Yeah. So I think it's fine to be like, oh, this is what we want. But if you're in the negotiating tables, you can't just get it with no cost. So I think it's easy for him to make all these promises as the opposition. Mm-hmm. But obviously when you're the one in power, like, you have to be able to implement these things. You can't make these big promises. So I think sometimes that he maybe is maybe too optimistic, or is trying to lead us to too much optimism, like,
or carried away on the motivation of the youth movement.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a very, like, British response when someone promises something like that?
Well, yeah, we're very sceptical, but to be fair, Harry, to be fair, it's not without reason, is it? Yeah. I mean, I'm very sceptical about his promises about student fees, because we've seen it happen before with Nick Clegg, when he promised and then obviously went back on that promise, and then the Conservative Party rising the fees, which I think is completely, like, unacceptable.
Yeah,
you would not do that in a business agreement. Why you can do it with students, I don't know why that is okay. And then, so yeah, you can understand why people are skeptical, and maybe that's why he knows that people are skeptical, so he's trying to be really enthusiastic. I just wish there'd been a little less Tory bashing as well. I think he should, instead of focusing on their weaknesses, maybe made more of their strengths.
Yeah, I
there was
so
a fair
sad
bit.
Politics.
Yeah, it's
the
sad nature.
The
it's the sad nature of politics. But I think that is a sign of weakness when one of your main hard-hitting arguments is, "Oh, look at them; they're in chaos."
Yeah, it's like deflecting and sort of trying to hide what your issues are. Yeah,
Theresa May did that pretty much for most of the general election campaign.
And her campaign was terrible.
Terrible. Yeah, I mean, most people are predicting that she's not going to be leading the Conservative Party for much longer.
She's on her last legs. I know it's not something we're talking about, but I mean, just on the flip side of it, whilst we're sort of just where we're saying about a matter of principle, one thing that obviously this summer, when some of the approval ratings were coming in for sort of who people thought might replace it, obviously, you know, the standard names like Boris Johnson and stuff were in the
Yeah,
but I think, like, there was like a sudden rise, like Jacob Rees-Mogg, for example, and people I think it was a comment that I remember someone in my family mentioned. They potentially said, well, he could effectively be then the Tories' equivalent of Corbyn, someone that's got
strong views
that he won't, you know, budge on them, and that might be the antithesis to what Corbyn will be. So I know that's another thing that's brewing.
There was, I'm aware we haven't got tons of time, but there was one policy point that I'd like to pull out, which I think was a good example of where he definitely noted something that the Tories have done that just hasn't worked, which was with the housing being a priority for Labour. And he mentioned the Grenfell fire tragedy and argues that Tory deregulation and austerity was in part responsible. And I think that is an example where that is a real problem. There are a lot of houses which are in terrible conditions, people living in terrible conditions.
Yeah.
And because of cutbacks, because of austerity and because of deregulation, that's just not getting looked at. So I do think housing, again, it's a very they're putting social factors at the top of their priorities, which I think is perhaps a return to, as Jeremy Corbyn's always said, the traditional principles of Labour is a social party, and that I did really like.
Yeah, I think some of what he said about like his anti-gentrification measures, I think they sound good, but part of me worries is if there's too much difficulty put on redevelopment. Mm. Well, then these areas just never get redeveloped, we'll end up in squalor.
Will it dissuade new businesses?
So it's sort of, how do you find the balance between gentrification and leaving it?
And is gentrification not a sign that of a regeneration of an area?
Yeah.
I think
the use of the word gentrification implies he's kind of batting against, again, it implies it's got negative connotations and maybe could have reworded better.
Driving around London in this summer, it's actually quite scary when you go past all the new... So, you know, the Tories are saying, we are building new houses. And you see these new kind of flats being constructed. And you just think, these are all going to be so expensive. Like, they're not, you know, the kind of block social housing that is affordable.
Yeah.
And yes, maybe it's not the highest quality.
They're
and
not catering for those that need housing.
Yeah, and the Grenfell's proved that there needs to be better safety measures on these social houses. But the flats that are being constructed, you know, they're going to be a million plus. And it's like, you know, these new homeowners that are walking around with... or these new buyers who are walking around with thousands of pounds of debt from university, how are they going to afford
to live
in these places? There's, you know, they might be building houses, but there's no one to buy them apart from, you know, Russian oligarchs who won't even be living there while there's a massive homeless problem in London as well.
And I do think the Labour Party has picked out on that, and by making housing a priority, I think that could be, for me, that would definitely be something that would encourage me to vote Labour.
Yeah, it's definitely a redeeming factor because it is something that needs tackled. And he mentioned in his speech that homes now cost, like, for us, it'll be three times more than what our grandparents paid, which is shocking. And
it's just...
like, you just can't get over it.
I can't imagine being able to get myself a home under the age of 30.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to say under the age of 40, after what Harry's just said. At least not in London.
Yeah, I don't know.
If I want to live in Aberdeen, I'm sure it'd be fine, but I don't.
You can buy a castle in Scotland. But
you could, but in London, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. I don't know how young people will continue. No. And at the end of the day, like, in London, London needs its sort of normal workers. It's waitresses, it's bar staff, and all these people who make the city function. It's not all, like... tech savvy people or lawyers or CEOs. You need people who aren't earning millions, and those people need places to live and to be able to afford to live. So, like, something needs to be done, or I think we're heading for a bad way.
This is URN.